The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
Will genuine faith always result in good works? Well, that is what we're going to explore on today's episode of Grace in Focus. Hi, I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Thank you so much for joining us. We are currently in a series responding to Wayne Grudem's critique of free grace, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. But before we do, I want to remind you of our national conference. This is a great time to get together with other free grace, like-minded believers and learn from the Bible, fellowship with others who love the Lord. I love this time every year, and I hope that you'll come and join us. Now, to find out more about our national conference, you can go to faithalone.org. You can click on events, and you can find out everything you need to know right there. You can even register right there on the site. I certainly hope to see you there. But until then, let's get right to today's discussion with Dr. Bob Wilkin and Sean Lazar. Here's Grace in Focus.
All right, welcome to the show. My name is Sean Lazar, and this is Grace in Focus. Thank you for listening. I'm here in the studio with Bob Wilkin.
Hello, everybody.
And we're going through a book by Wayne Grudem called Free Grace Theology, Five Ways It Diminishes the Gospel, which Grudem, who is probably one of the best-selling systematic theologians in North America, wrote about the free grace movement, and obviously he thought it was growing enough that he should write something about it, and Crossway actually published it. It's good in the sense that, you know, we're getting the word out.
Right.
You know, even bad press is good press, sometimes people say.
Well, absolutely. I'm happy to have the opportunity to respond to what he's written, as I did in my book, Grudem Against Grace.
Right. Grudem Against Grace, A Defense of Free Grace Theology, which you can pick up at our website, faithalone.org. So in the last chapter, Unlikely Interpretations, that's the title of the chapter, Grudem goes over, 11
right.
verses that he thinks free grace people give unlikely interpretations to. Number 9, which is James 2, 14 to 17. This is obviously a very well-known passage. James writes, "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warmed and filled,' without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead." And Grudem says, these verses pose a significant challenge to the free grace position because they seem to be saying that genuine faith will always result in good works, which is his position.
Well, it's not exactly. That's what he's saying, but that's not the way he interprets the verse. Because this is an absolute statement that he doesn't believe in.
All right, in what sense?
Well, Grudem believes that believers can fall away for a time. And so during that time, it's not always resulting in good works.
Uh-huh.
And so how long is that time? Well, he doesn't know exactly. He doesn't want to say.
Right.
But clearly it could be for weeks or months.
Right.
So a believer could go for weeks or months without his genuine faith resulting in good works. Grudem's view is less than what he says here.
Right. So whereas he says here, genuine faith will always result in good works, what you're saying is, no, if you pressed Grudem, he would say, okay, well, not always, always. There are times where...
Not always, not. Always, no. But mostly always.
Mostly
He's
always.
Mostly dead.
So he says, talks about the views of Zane Hodges, as well as Dave Anderson and Charlie Bing and Fred Shea and John Correa. And he says, Hodges writes, James is not here talking about salvation from hell. Why should he? He and his readers were born again. And Grudem's response is, Hodges fails to take into account the fact that James clearly signals that he's not talking about all of his readers or even most of his readers, but about quote-unquote someone with whom they are in contact. That's on page 133. He goes on to say James is talking about someone who may be in a different situation from most of the readers.
All right, let me comment on that argument. I've never heard it before, but it's a clever one.
Okay.
So notice in verse 14, what is the benefit, my brothers, or what does it profit my brethren? I take it that he's acknowledging that my brethren refers to born-again people. That's the implication of what he's saying.
I would think so.
So then he's saying, but this someone is different than the readers.
Yeah, so he's saying, all right, my brethren, what if someone else, not included among the brethren, says this?
Right. And the word someone is the Greek word tis, and it means someone, anyone, whatever. So he's got this person not being one of them. But he doesn't go on, that I can recall, and you can tell me if I miss this, to point out when he gives the illustration in verses 15 and 16 of someone who says he has faith but does not have works. He says in verse 15, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, verse 16, and one of you.
You. So now it's among the believing group.
So now, according to Grudem, the you are born again people.
Well, you would think
and
he would say
that. Someone is not a born again person. So now the someone in verse 14, who's the same one of you in verse 16. In verse 16, he's born again, but in verse 14, he's not born again.
I see what you're saying. So in Grudem's reading, there has to be this kind of unlikely switch of, what good is it, my brothers, talking to believers, if someone, a non-believer...
Not one of you, but
yeah,
someone else.
He has faith. And then he uses an example. If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking daily food, and a brother or sister is believers again,
right,
and one of you says to them, the you has to be among the believers.
Right. And notice what the one of you does. He says, be filled and be warm, right?
He's an example of someone who has faith but not works.
But he says but doesn't do.
Right.
And, you see what I mean?
And Grudem is trying to say this can't possibly be about believers because of this word someone. And you're saying James uses the illustration of a you who has faith but without works.
Right. And all
so this,
this
is obviously two believers.
And all of this goes back to James 2:12, which, of course, Grudem doesn't practice exegesis anywhere in this book. But in James 2:12, he says, so speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty.
And so the warning is to the believers.
Right. But it's two things. Not just speak, but also do. In verse 14, the problem is they speak, but they don't do.
Right.
In 15 and 16, they say the right thing, be filled and be warmed.
Right.
But they don't give them anything needed for the body. They don't do.
So when Grudem says James is talking about someone who may be in a different situation from most of his readers, I think we could say, yeah, they could be a believer who's not putting their faith into practice, whereas the other believers are putting their faith into practice.
Right.
But what he wants it to say is, oh, this can't be about a believer at all. It's just not plausible given the context here.
Exactly. And of course, the other problem is Grudem wants to argue that the verb save, sozo.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you go
listen
into
to this.
That?
This is great. This is why the free grace position makes sense. And we really, really, really try to look at words, do word studies, and try to understand things like, well, what kind of salvation is being talked about here? So here's what Grudem says. In this passage, James asks the question, can that faith save him? And so, as a free grace person, we really want to know what that save is. We're not going to assume what the salvation is there. But here's what Grudem says. In addition, Hodges fails to consider that whenever the Greek word sozo, save, deliver, is used in the New Testament, it always refers to eternal salvation, except where the context specifies a situation of rescue from physical danger or healing from physical sickness.
And he gives how many examples?
Well, he gives one from James 5:15. Matthew 8:25 and 9:22.
So he gives three examples. The impression is there are three passages in the New Testament where sozo doesn't refer to eternal salvation or to regeneration, and all the rest do.
What I found, this is very implausible to me because as an example of what I mentioned before, going to the text and actually doing these studies, you did a whole chapter in your book, The 10 Most Misunderstood Words, about this very word.
And I've gone through all the uses of sozo and soteria, which, by the way, he's not discussing soteria. It doesn't occur in James, so I get that.
Right.
But the noun form also. And what I found is 7 times out of 10, it refers to some sort of deliverance in this life.
Yeah.
And only 3 times out of 10 does it refer to, what does Grudem call it? Eternal salvation.
So you would, based on your studies, you'd make the exact opposite claim.
Right. I've actually studied the passages. I don't think he has.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm being unfair here. He does say, I should mention on page 134, when he talks about the rare example, what he thinks are rare examples, he mentions as in James 5:15, Matthew 8, Matthew 9.
Right.
So he clearly implies there could be a few more.
Right.
But
right.
What he doesn't say is the vast majority refer to temporal deliverance. And I would say anybody that's done the study unless they're dishonest, and I don't think Grudem's dishonest. I think he's an honorable man. If they'd done the study, they would never say what he's saying here.
Now, he does make a good point, though, and I think you would agree that ultimately it's the context that decides what the salvation
is. Oh, absolutely.
So he says that there is no such contextual specification in James 2:14 to 17 that would show that this is temporal deliverance as opposed to eternal salvation. What do you say about that?
Well, first of all, it's one of you, which is one of the believers. So whatever is going to happen to him is not eternal condemnation.
So you'd say because there's a theological reason there. If they're a believer, they have eternal life.
Right. But secondly, in verse 14, it starts with three Greek words, tita aphelos, and verse 16 ends with the same three Greek words.
Okay.
That's an inclusio. It's an inclusion.
Yeah.
And the clear point in verses 14 and 16 is what good is it? What use is it? What does it profit? Depending on your English translation. And the point is, faith without works does not profit. It's unproductive. It's unhelpful. And by the way, I think one of the reasons he repeats it twice, because it doesn't profit me if I don't put my faith into practice, nor does it benefit the believer who I'm supposed to benefit. Now the person still doesn't have enough to eat or enough to wear. So it's a double, what does it profit? It doesn't profit either one.
And you're thinking that because the salvation is about profit,
right,
this tells us this is profitable in this life. It's a temporal profit.
Right. Not only that, all five uses of the verb sozo in James refer to temporal judgment.
Now,
all five.
Right. I mean, clearly even Grudem agrees that the prayer of the sick
in
has 5:15, to do with temporal salvation.
Right.
That's a clear one.
But 121 is clear, 412 is clear, and 519 and 20 is clear.
All right. Well, I'm sure we're going to get to address those when we go over the next couple verses in James. Keep on listening. You can listen to us on YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, our website, and we're also on Audible recently. Hey, if you have any questions about what you've heard so far, you can always pick up a copy of Bob's book or send us a question to radio@faithalone.org. We'd love to hear from you, and maybe we can turn it into a future episode.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that great discussion. Would you like to learn more from Dr. Bob and Sean and the other guests that we have on this show? If so, you can do exactly that by going to faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. It's packed with all kinds of materials that are designed to help you grow and mature in your faith and your understanding of Scripture. A great example is our daily blog posts. You can get signed up for free, and every day a new post will show up in your inbox. Go to faithalone.org. This radio show is made possible from the generous donations of listeners just like you. If you'd like to become a financial partner with this show, you can go to faithalone.org and find out exactly how to do just that. Do you have a question for Sean or Bob? I know that I've often had questions for them. If you do, I want to give you our email address so that you can reach out to us to ask that burning question. It's radio@faithalone.org. radio@faithalone.org. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about the phrase, faith without works is dead. So join us for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep grace in focus.
The preceding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.